This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
The difference between the boss's pay and everyone else's pay may become tougher to figure out. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. If you want to quickly get under the skin of many CEOs, just bring up the government rule that companies have to publicly disclose the gap between what the boss gets paid and what everyone else gets paid. Congress ordered companies to do this as part of the Dodd-Frank legislation that followed the last financial crisis. Now there's word the acting head of the Securities and Exchange Commission has ordered an early review of the pay ratio rule, perhaps with a view to getting rid of it. For some context here, I dug into our archives for a piece I did with the man credited with inventing the thing. Texas Southern law professor James Cotton had first proposed a CEO pay ratio in a Law Review article. He was inspired by a time earlier in his career when he worked as a corporate lawyer for IBM.
You're working with this guy, and he seems to be pretty intelligent, but dang, he doesn't look like he's worth $2 million a year.
These days, think $20 million with a nod to inflation. So Cotton came up with this ratio. Take the CEO's compensation and divide by the average of everyone else's pay at the company. If the CEO makes $20 million a year and everyone else averages $100,000, then it's a 200-to-1 ratio. The bigger the ratio, the wider the gulf between the boss and everyone else.
The top executives earn a significant amount of money, and they're people who are manufacturing the actual machine that's providing this money and are not making nearly as much money. And I thought about it, and I said, you know, there's something wrong with this situation.
Now, during that interview nearly 5 years ago, it became clear to me that the professor, then in his early 70s, had not yet heard his idea had become federal law. You see, Professor Cotton has impaired vision and hadn't tracked the fine print of Dodd-Frank.
You know, I keep track of financial business and stuff. You have to remember, I have this low vision. I'm legally blind, so it's very hard to read things. But that is great news if it's actually in the statute.
But that rule's days may now be numbered. Some critics argue that it casts an unfair light on the pay of CEOs who work in companies with more lower-paid employees, such as fast food chains, compared to bosses with more higher-paid employees, such as engineers. The acting SEC chair has said in the past that it was something that, quote, pandered to politically connected interest groups. The CEO-to-everyone-else pay ratio is especially wide in the U.S. compared to other countries and much larger than it used to be a generation ago.
It's a critical time for the media conglomerate. Disney-owned ESPN lost 2 million subscribers last year. James Stix is with Wedbush Securities.
It's an industry-wide issue.
Because people are ditching cable for Netflix. Now, in the short term, it's not a huge problem for Disney. Scott Robson is with S&P Global.
ESPN is still very profitable for Disney.
Robson says cable providers that carry ESPN are locked into rate hikes that more than make up for the subscriber loss.
So it continues to grow revenue.
But long-term, declining cable viewership is still a problem. Disney's response? Invest $1 billion in BAM Tech, a digital streaming company.
That was to position the network for a subscription streaming service.
Still no magic wand, says Richard Greenfield, analyst with BTIG.
It's not clear yet what Disney can actually offer direct-to-consumer, even with BAM Tech.
That's because ESPN's major sports are contractually stuck on cable for years to come. Neat and tidy happy endings aren't common in the real world, even for Disney. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishore for Marketplace.
Now to New Haven, Connecticut, among the cities where you can find parking meter things that accept coins for the homeless. Harriet Jones reports.
Surrounded by the storied buildings of Yale University in downtown New Haven, Rich Couvers sits on a step holding a sign that says, Homeless and Hungry.
I've been clean from crack cocaine going on a year. I lost my housing due to my drug addiction, and I went to jail. I just got out of jail 2 months ago. So right now it's a little struggle.
Coovers says he's frank with people who give him money. He might go buy a beer. But just about a block away, there's some competition for spare change. A brightly coloured meter that accepts cash or credit card donations in a New Haven initiative called Give Change to Make Change. The city's mayor, Tony Harp.
We thought for the kind-hearted people who really want to help people who are in need, who are homeless, that we would have a way for them to give dollars.
Harp worked on the idea with downtown merchants who want to cut down on panhandling.
It's something that we believe detracts from our city.
The donations will go to a homelessness outreach initiative run by local nonprofit Liberty Community Services, which provides housing for the homeless.
I think the principal issue behind it is really education.
John Bradley heads up Liberty. He says there are enough services available in New Haven that no one has to panhandle to meet their basic needs, and he wants the initiative to make people think.
If you're seeking to end homelessness, giving money to panhandlers may not be the solution to that.
Mark Horvath has experienced homelessness and addiction in his own past.
How you educate the public is listening to that person on the street, giving them a voice.
Horvath now runs the advocacy group Invisible People, and he's against the meter idea.
The meters are not going to end panhandling. They're not going to raise any significant amount of money for homeless services, and they reinforce wrong stereotypes that all homeless people are bums and lazy, and that's, oh my gosh, so wrong.
And New Haven's panhandlers themselves? Some say they don't mind the meters. Others say the money's better in their pockets. In New Haven, I'm Harriet Jones for Marketplace.
And why has the animal welfare data disappeared from the U.S. Department of Agriculture's websites? If you missed that on the air, it's in the first Marketplace podcast of the day. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.